Now, newly declassified information shows why the CIA believes the Saudi crown prince ordered the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi in 2018. According to a report released on Friday, the U.S. intelligence community said it would be, quote, highly unlikely, end quote, that Saudi officials would have carried out an operation like this without the crown prince giving the go-ahead. It's because he had absolute control of the kingdom's security and intelligence organizations. On Friday, President Biden said he will hold Saudi Arabia accountable for human rights abuses. Since then, the U.S. has imposed visa restrictions on dozens of Saudi individuals. So far, that doesn't appear to include Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see the Biden administration do more to punish Saudi Arabia over the murder of the journalist? Do you think the president's doing some important pro-con math here, weighing and balancing the risks of offending Saudi Arabia? What kind of relationship do you want to see the U.S. have with the country going forward? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Saeed Khan is a senior lecturer in Near East and Asian Studies at Wayne State University in Detroit. Saeed, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me again, Rob.
Well, this report details why the CIA thinks that the Crown Prince had this role in Khashoggi's murder. In a lot of ways, though, this isn't a surprise. I think everybody pretty much thought that that role was there. Is that right?
Absolutely. I mean, since this rather terrible murder happened in Istanbul in October of 2018, all roads were pointing to Mohammed bin Salman, or as he's known colloquially, MBS. He wields simply too much power and authority within the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia for it not to have passed his desk, so to speak. Or to put it in another way, if there were such things going on, there would have definitely been the ability for MBS to put a halt to it.
And let's talk about the role of the Crown Prince in Saudi Arabia. He's not the king. There is a king, but effectively, he is and has been the face of Saudi Arabia around the world. Can you talk about his power in that country?
Well, crown princes have always wielded a tremendous level of both visibility as well as power within the kingdom. They oftentimes are the king behind the king. And we see that this has happened really since the early 1980s with, at that time, King Khalid, who was infirmed. We have to remember that a lot of the Saudi kings have ascended to the throne very late in life, all of them having been thus far, including the current King Salman, sons of the founder of Saudi Arabia, Abdulaziz bin Saud. So Khalid was in many ways eclipsed by his brother or half-brother Fahad, who then, when he became king, was quite active until he suffered from a rather debilitating stroke. His half-brother Abdullah then took over really the day-to-day operations until his death in 2015. And then we have the ascension of King Salman, who is in his mid-80s and not certainly getting any younger, and reports say that he does suffer from some form of dementia. MBS represents a real paradigm shift within Saudi Arabia. He will be the first king from the next generation, the grandchildren of the founder Abdulaziz Al Saud. He's only about 35 years old. He is very, very charming. And when he visited many Western capitals, he certainly charmed everybody, whether it was President Trump or going into London and Paris, as well as Berlin, speaking to people from all sectors, not just the political, but also financial and tech. He is adored, if not worshipped, in Saudi Arabia, particularly by young people that represent close to about 70% of the population being under the age of 30. So as a result of this, we find that MBS's position, both on the global scale until, of course, the Khashoggi murder, as well as domestically, is quite strong and quite prominent.
And there was a lot of speculation from columnists and politicians like, hey, this could be a guy who's going to bring Saudi Arabia into the 20th century, maybe not the 21st, but the 20th century, a modernizer, somebody we can work with, somebody who maybe is more in line with Western values. Now, this Khashoggi murder and other human rights issues, including Yemen, which we could talk about, people are rethinking that now, right?
Well, in a way, they are. When you say about bringing Saudi Arabia into the 20th century, MBS is rather ambitious. In fact, I think he's looking beyond the 21st century to bring Saudi Arabia into the 22nd century. His Vision 2030 plan is one that is going to certainly remake the kingdom, one that is going beyond just some of the reforms that have come under his authority, including the liberalization of society. I think it's important to recognize that with Saudi Arabia, particularly over the last 3 years, there is a palpable shift, and particularly one that is being felt and internalized by the local population. The ability for women to now drive, the curbing of the otherwise dreaded religious police. They have certainly been curbed from their prosecutorial authority, being able to police the domestic social engagement of people. As a result of this, MBS is certainly looking forward to turning KSA, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, into something beyond some of his neighbors and who now he feels are his competitors, United Arab Emirates, Qatar, as examples.
And now we're talking about this and focused on this in the U.S. because there is a strong U.S.-Saudi Arabian relationship. What does that look like these days?
It's important to recognize that in May, it will mark the 90th anniversary of the United States recognizing formally the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. So that longevity in many ways explains not only the relationship that Washington has with Riyadh, but also what the Biden administration has currently with the Saudi regime, both King Salman as well as with MBS. It's important to remember that the Saudis place a very high premium on continuity and on consistency when it comes to not just U.S. policy, but taking a look at its position within the broader geopolitical landscape. And as a result of it, I think Washington has recognized that. And with few exceptions, we find that it has really towed the line. It's, again, worth remembering that 15 out of the 19 hijackers in the 9/11 attacks were Saudi passport holders. And given the fact that the relationship has somehow withstood that trauma, it indicates that what has happened currently with the Khashoggi murder is being placed within that context.
What do you think of what we've seen from the Biden administration now in terms of response to the Khashoggi murders with the release of this information and now at least some action against some Saudi officials?
Nothing dealing with the Saudis or really with the region is without a tremendous level of nuance and a tremendous level of messaging. It's critical to recognize that President Biden spoke with King Salman, not with MBS, which is a drastic departure from the prior administration, which definitely dealt primarily, if not exclusively, with the Crown Prince. That is a very, very important signal because it recognizes that the king is still the king, and perhaps MBS has been a little bit over his skis, and still it's premature to anoint him as the formal king of Saudi Arabia. That time will come very soon. But for now, the fact that there has been this pivot, although it may not seem to be a very big deal, is in fact quite a rebuke to MBS. Secondly, the Biden administration's withdrawal of support for the Saudi military activities in Yemen is also seen as a rebuke to MBS. He is, among his various briefs in his portfolio, also the Minister of Defense of Saudi Arabia. And the Yemen campaign was very much seen as his project. The fact that the Biden administration has withdrawn support for it can only then be seen as also a bit of a slap in the face to MBS. So again, what we're seeing here is subtle digs, if you will, at MBS and a brief but still important recalibration of the relationship between Washington and Riyadh.
Talking to Saeed Khan, senior lecturer in Near East and Asian Studies at Wayne State University. He's talking to us about the Biden administration's response to the killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi and the U.S.-Saudi Arabian relationship. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think a tougher, maybe less subtle punishment against the Saudi crown prince is needed? Do you worry about the effect it could have on the U.S. relationship with Saudi Arabia? Do you have questions for our guests about the politics of the region? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about the Biden administration's actions against Saudi Arabia for the killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Our guest is Saeed Khan, senior lecturer in Near East and Asian Studies at Wayne State University in Detroit. You can join in with your thoughts and your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Whatever you want to bring up about the relationship between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia, what you want to see the U.S. do, if anything, more in response to the murder of Jamal Khashoggi and this new report out on the intelligence about that. Let's go to your calls now. John is with us in Fitchburg. John, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to ask the guest what he thinks about the status of the freedom of the press situation in Saudi Arabia. Is it getting better?
John, thanks for the call. Saeed, freedom of the press in Saudi Arabia, any changes in recent years?
Not ones that we would necessarily be able to detect. And thank you for the call, John. The press in Saudi Arabia, as it is in many countries in the region, is highly regulated. It's also important to recognize that much of the media in the region follows a certain culture whereby the general criticism of the regimes is not one that we would necessarily see. Much of the coverage will be what we would regard as being rather ceremonial, rather orchestral, covering stories that have pageantry, meeting with dignitaries, foreign trips. So it's really not something that we would find much in common with the way that we negotiate with the press here. But again, you will not find much, if any, negative publicity regarding the leaders there.
Thanks for that call, John. And that makes Jamal Khashoggi's murder stand out even more in some ways. Can you talk about his role as a journalist?
Well, Jamal Khashoggi was, of course, a very respected journalist and one who was able to leverage his distance geographically from Saudi Arabia in order to then describe and provide criticism of the regime, particularly those areas that he saw to be rife with contradiction and even hypocrisy. So the old axiom of the emperor having no clothes was something that Khashoggi was able to provide here as a reporter for The Washington Post. And that was something which was seen to be on multiple levels, highly problematic for a kingdom and for a regime that very, very judiciously and jealously guards its image, guards its reputation, and guards its credibility. Because in many ways, that is what provides it with the legitimacy, not just from its own population, but as the dominant force in the so-called Gulf Cooperation Council, the group of Gulf states. Saudi Arabia really is the mothership. And as a result of it, anything that would seem to then cast a negative light on the kingdom, and particularly on its regime, is seen as the first step of a slippery slope that they do not want to take. And unfortunately, Khashoggi was then seen as an existential threat to MBS, even if not the regime itself, but MBS took it rather personally.
And then some people in the human rights community in particular, Saeed, have said, in effect, we don't want subtle diplomatic signals. We want something directly punishing the Crown Prince for his involvement in this. From the perspective of the U.S. State Department, what kind of concerns would they have before doing much more than has already been done?
Well, again, it really goes to a 90-year-old relationship. And of course, also the kind of economic connections that exist with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. It's not just the oil, it is the sovereign wealth fund. And at the same time, this comes at a very crucial period for the Biden administration in trying to assess what is America's positionality, not only in the Middle East, but really more geopolitically. It's no coincidence that the release of the report occurred at the same day as a conversation with King Salman, and then subsequently the Biden administration ordering military strikes on two positions within the Syrian-Iraqi border, ostensibly to neutralize or at least to attack positions that were seen as having a connection to Iran when it comes to Iran's sponsorship of various groups and insurgency elements in the region. And this, again, shows the kind of relationship that exists between the United States and the Saudis. It's a quid pro quo. It's providing something for something to allay the anxieties that the Saudis have that the Biden administration is looking to resurrect the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, also known as the Iran nuclear deal, and negotiations with Tehran. So as a result of it, and unfortunately we see this happening quite a bit historically, not just with Saudi Arabia, human rights end up taking a backseat to what is known as realpolitik.
Time for one more quick call. We've got Bob on the line in Milwaukee. Bob, hi.
Hi. Just to preface quickly, my daughter spent 2 years in Riyadh teaching in an international school. But here's the simplistic question. If Saudi Arabia did not have any oil, would we care what they do or don't do?
Thank you for the question, Bob. And the very succinct answer is no. But at the same time, it is oil, and we do care immensely about it, as we have for a very long time. As I said before, in 1931, the United States formally recognizes the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. In 1933, it signs its first oil deal by way of the Standard Oil Company of California. And that has in many ways defined, shaped, not just the relationship so far, but well could well into the next century. It's important also to recognize that MBS is probably going to become king within the next 5 years at before the age of 40. It's expected that he'll probably serve for 40 years. That's 10 presidential elections. He certainly seems to have time on his side, and Washington recognizes that.
Thanks for that call. And Saeed, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thank you, Rob.
Saeed Khan is a senior lecturer in Near East and Asian Studies at Wayne State University in Detroit. He talked to us about the U.S. intelligence community's newly declassified report connecting the Saudi crown prince to the murder of U.S.-based journalist Jamal Khashoggi.